Hello, and welcome to Jason Major's Sex Party. On this podcast, we'll be hearing from people about one thing: sex. How they like it, how they do it, why they do it, with whom they do it. What makes me qualified to host such a menagerie of sin? Why, I am a sinner of the highest order, of course. My name is Jason Major, and I have sex. I am a cisgendered, heterosexual man who just turned 40. I've never been married, I've got no kids. I've been a swinger for the past 15 years, and I'm currently in ethically non-monogamous, polyamorous relationships with multiple women who are all aware of each other, and even friends. I watch pornography. I have visited sex workers. I have shared cocktails with porn stars. I have been to and even hosted sex parties. Basically, I'm your average run-of-the-mill American pervert, with one important exception. Unlike most of you out there, I am out, and I am proud about my perversions. Don't get me wrong, it's not like I give my relatives sex toys for Christmas or show my mom pics from my last orgy. But I don't run from my own desires, and I embrace my pursuit of physical pleasure openly. I don't hide, and I don't lie about who I am. I find sex to be one of the most fascinating subjects there is. So I put together this little homage to the great and powerful Ira Glass in order to explore the world of sex one subject at a time. So let's get things started, shall we? The theme of the party today is sex work. I figured we should start this new podcast with some stories about the world's oldest profession. In August 2015, Vox.com published a piece by German Lopez titled, "I looked at the best evidence for banning prostitution. It's absolutely terrible." I recommend you go check out the piece on Vox.com website. It's fantastic. The basic gist of the piece is that our current legal attitudes towards sex work have very little basis in reality and may indeed exacerbate some of the ills that we associate with sex workers. The biggest thing to me was the conflagration of sex trafficking and sex workers that has gotten a lot of attention recently. People seem eager to lump together sex trafficking and sex work. It makes sense, right? Who would want to do this kind of work of their own free will? Sex workers must be slaves in some way. In my experience, that's a radically ignorant idea from people who have very little experience with actual sex workers. Do the analogies! Let's say that some theoretical politician decides that rape is something that needs to be stopped immediately. They're probably not a Republican congressman, but I digress. Imagine this person thinks, we must stop these terrible rapes from occurring to unsuspecting women. That's a reasonable and admirable idea, of course. I would agree with that. But let's say this person gets a bright idea. Well, let's just ban sex altogether. Sex and rape are pretty much the same thing, right? You can't have rape without sex. Makes perfect sense. I think to an outside observer, there may be instances where rape and sex look extremely similar, but I guarantee that this is not the case to the people involved. They most definitely can tell the difference between consensual and non-consensual sex. Most rational people would agree that sex and rape are completely different things. So why can't we make this distinction when it comes to sex work? We have the common sense to look at rape and say, well, there's a sexual component, but that's not what rape really is all about. Why can't we make that distinct difference when it comes to sex work and trafficking human beings for sex? But doesn't sex work lead to more trafficking? Look at it this way. Imagine sex work was completely legal. Now, let's say I owned a Jack Shack massage parlor in your neighborhood. It's all above board, the cops know about it. In fact, they'll respond to calls the same way that they would to any other business, with the same professional manner. I pay state and federal taxes on all the money that comes in. I'm probably paying some licensing board at the state level, and maybe that money's going to schools like we supposedly do with the lottery. So now I'm looking to hire people to work at this place. Where do I go? Do I go to my local Yakuza or Triad branch? Ask them to fly in a bunch of 15-year-old girls from Thailand? Or maybe I call the local biker gangs and have them kidnap some college co-eds from out of state? That seems not only pricey, but kind of dangerous for this legitimate business I've opened up. What would I really do? I'd put an ad up on Craigslist, or somewhere else on the web. I'd put up a section on my website asking for applications. Hell, I could post flyers, for fuck's sake, if this were all out in the open. But under the current system of criminalization, the legal risks in prostitution mean that there is plenty of space for bad people to get into prostitution and no legal protection for the sex workers themselves. Anyone who is working at a brothel or a massage parlor against their will is not being held there by a legitimate business person. But if sex work were legal, then what incentive do you have to traffic people in to do sex work against their will? Think about the options in that case. You can do business with the kind of people who can have someone kidnapped and brought in from another country. Then you can do what you can to force that person to do all manner of naughtiness against their will, but with enough enthusiasm and skill that the clients don't feel like they're banging Anne Frank. All the while making sure that your sex slaves don't escape or try to get help from the clients or get their hands on a weapon and try to kill you. Oh, and don't forget, these sex slaves still have to be hot. So you can commit all those crimes and go through all that, or you could put up an ad and hire someone and pay them a fair wage. All right, I get it. You don't believe that there are actually women out there who would choose to do sex work totally on their own. Well, fellow perverts, I have a tale of two sex workers to launch the show today. One perfectly legal under current U.S. law, the other, not so much. First up, we have a sexologist who helps people with their troubles around intimacy. If you've watched Masters of Sex on Showtime, she's kind of like that, except this is all actually true. After that, we have one of those poor, economically stressed women who was pushed to have sex with strange men in a skeezy massage parlor in order to pay off a cruel pimp. Except that skeezy massage parlor was in a clean, affluent suburban family home, and her pimp, that would be the loan company Sallie Mae. So stick around. Lori is a mother and wife living in Long Beach, California. Lori also works as a professional sex surrogate. Her journey to helping others with their sexual dysfunction leads through a Lifetime original movie and the brothels of Nevada. But I'll let her tell the tale.
Sex in general is just really drawn. I'm just really drawn to it. Obviously, it's very pleasurable for me. I enjoy myself, but it's more than that. It's just fascinating to me. Like, everything about the world of sexuality is fascinating to me. When I was pretty young, I can remember being like 12, 13 years old and people saying, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I remember seeing this movie on like Lifetime or whatever it was about these young girls that lived in this mansion and they were prostitutes. They would live in this mansion and men would come pick them up and wine and dine them and they would have sex with them and take them home. And it was portrayed in the movie like, oh, those poor girls and, you know, how could they do that? I remember thinking like, oh my God, that's what I want for myself. That's amazing. How could you not want that? When I met my current husband, I told him that was something, you know, I was like, yeah, when I was a kid, this is what I want to do. And his response was, well, then you should do it. And I went, what? Why would you say that if you actually loved and cared about me? But it was something that interested me, but I honestly never thought that it would ever, ever really happen because it's not like it's something you go looking for. We ride Harleys, and we were at a motorcycle rally in Nevada, and we were walking around there and everything, and there was a booth of a lady that was selling t-shirts for Mustang Ranch, which is a brothel in Nevada, outside Sparks, and she was selling t-shirts and everything. I was like, oh, you know, just looking at them and everything, and while I was looking, she and I were just chit-chatting, and she said, you know, have you ever thought about working in this business? And I said, oh, well, when I was a kid, I thought it would be fun, ha, 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 and I just kind of let it go. And she goes, no, I'm serious. I think that you would be really good at what we're doing. And I said, you know, I was like 40 by this time. So I said, I'm not 22, platinum blonde, tight-bodied, whatever. And she goes, that's not what most of our men are looking for. They want someone who's a little older, who knows what she's doing, and has confidence and carry on an intelligent conversation. And she said, take my card, call me next week. Well, you know, I'd like to interview. I was like, oh, okay, thanks. And I walked away from there going, what? Like, I'm going to call her and interview for a job as a prostitute. That's not going to happen. But it piqued my interest enough that I went home and I spent like the last year. I read everything about anything that had to do with sex work across the board, and just really explored like my own feelings and thoughts around it. And it was still something that I was very fascinated by, and I could not comprehend what the hang-up was with an exchange of money for sex. I went back to my life and stuff, and then I started up with law school, and we went to the same motorcycle rally a year later, and we were just, while we were there, they had this motorcycle ride that was called the Cat House Poker Run. And you take your bikes and you ride from brothel to brothel, and you can do a tour and meet the girls and everything. And so I asked my husband, I was like, let's just go tour the places, you know, because that at least would be fun, you know. And he was like, well, maybe you'll get a job while we're out. I'm like, yeah, whatever, ha ha ha, you know, because that wasn't something I was even thinking of doing anymore at that point. I just thought it was flattering that she'd ever even asked me. So anyway, so we did the poker run. The last stop was at Mustang Ranch, and I was excited to just go check the place out. And while we were there, the place was flooded with, you know, thousands of people throughout the day. And it was quite crowded. And the same lady was on the property. And I went over, I was like, oh, I wanted to reintroduce myself. I met you last year and everything. And she looked at me and she grabbed my wrist and she said, and you never called. And I was expecting a call from you. And she goes, come with me. I'll interview you now. And I was like, oh, fuck. Actually, I don't remember there being any questions about, will you do this with somebody or will you do that, or you can't say no to anything like that. It was more about, it was like a personality kind of interview and like a psychological interview about how can you handle different personalities and people, and what are your take on, you know, shy people, and what are your take on being around, you know, groups of people. And it was because it's so, the sex is the least of it. It really is. So much of it is just affirming people and being that safe container for people to have permission to express themselves sexually how they desire to, and just being completely, not just non-judgmental, but celebrating of that. So anyway, so she offered me a job right there on the spot, and I left the interview, and I was just kind of like, okay, this is just crazy, and I don't even know what to think of this. So I went home, and the more I thought about it, it just like kept gnawing at me. And I knew that if I didn't try this, I would regret it for the rest of my life, because it was something that I always wanted to do, but I was too afraid and too chicken shit to actually do it, because I was afraid of judgments. I was afraid of what people would think. I went back to work and I put in for my vacation time, for 2-week vacation. And I spent my 2-week vacation up at Mustang Ranch working up there. And it was it was the most honest, empowering work that I had ever done before. And it was work that I actually could tell that I was making like a positive difference for people, because so many people would come in that didn't have any other place to express themselves, not just sexually, but emotionally or intimately. And to be able to be that person for them was really rewarding. The clients that would come through were really, really respectful. I think I only had, in the 6 months that I worked there, I only had maybe 2 that I really didn't care to spend time with. And of those, one of them came back and apologized and convinced, you know, was nice enough that I spent time with him again. And it was really nice. So yeah, but I loved the work. I really did. I really enjoyed it. After a time, it became like anything else, and it became work. Because my husband and I are non-monogamous, and our sex life between each other and everything is always been pretty fulfilling and full. You know, I would come home, I worked week on, week off, and I would come home, and the week that I would be off, it was just like, I was just exhausted from giving so much all week long that I was just, you know, I had no libido whatsoever when I got home. So, I mean, it started to take away from that as well. And then I went back to law school. My heart wasn't in it. And I came down, took the sexology course. And I was like, I want to work in something sex, but I know sitting and working at a brothel, there's got to be something bigger than that I can do, because that just wasn't, you know, I got to fulfill that thing that I wanted to do there, but that wasn't like a career choice for me. Because I wanted to do it just for the experience. But now I was like, okay, I want to do something for a career. What do I want to do? And I want to do something around sex and sexuality. I didn't know that you could get a degree in sex. And once I found that out, then I was just hit the ground running. I'm like, let's do this. And in that realm, I discovered sex surrogacy, which was such a perfect balance because I can take my experience that I've had, I can take my education that I have and my knowledge around sex and sexuality and really apply it and work with clients. I think I'm pretty well-rounded to serve people that way. People go see their therapist around sex therapy. They'll go see their therapist and they'll talk and they'll express their concerns or, you know, challenges that they have around sexuality. And they talk with their therapist. But there's only so much that you can break through and get done through talk therapy where sex is concerned. Because sex is very tactile. Sex is touching, feeling. You know, we have to experience things in order to understand them. As a surrogate partner therapist, my average client is probably middle-aged male virgin and many times experience some sort of sexual trauma in their life or have had zero touch, affection, and intimacy in their life. So what they will do is we will set up like a three-way meeting together, the therapist, the client, and myself, and we'll get on a path of how we're going to be able to teach this client to experience intimacy, affection, how to receive it, how to give it in a healthy manner, and I am the stand-in partner for this process. So with surrogate partner therapy, we take everything through the steps of having just met to learning how to have conversation with each other, be intimate with each other, share space with each other, lay down together, how to kiss, how to hold, how to caress, how to not just give and receive touch, but also how to ask for what kind of touch that you want, and how to hear somebody else asking for what kind of touch they want. So we might go through an exercise like rubbing shoulders, for example. And for 5 minutes, I'm just going to rub your shoulders in a way that feels good to me. And I'm rubbing your shoulders. And at the end of that time, you can tell me what you liked about it and what you didn't like about it. For a lot of people, that's really tough. Many times, it's very challenging for them to say, I would have liked it if you had pressed harder here, or I didn't like the way you pressed harder there, or whatever. But to use their voice and their words to, you know, express how they would like the experience to go. I'm safe. They're with me. They're processing the experience they have with me with their therapist. I'm talking to their therapist. They don't have to worry about me. I'm not going to, you know, lose my temper and get angry and blow up and break up with it. You know, they don't have to worry about any of that kind of stuff. It's like we're going to practice these things, but the relationship between us does become very real because you spend some very intimate time with somebody. But again, that's good. That's good for them to develop attachment. It's good for both of us to develop attachment because that's authentic and that may be the first time that they've experienced that kind of attachment. So to have that in a safe container and then to be able to have it end in a kind, safe way just serves even better for when they head out in the world. So when I work with a client, we'll go from just meeting each other to having conversations, to introducing touch, to learning how to the different levels of intimacy, how to, you know, share intimate space with each other. We'll learn different levels of arousal and we'll go all the way through. And most of the time clients get attached, which is good and it's healthy and they should, because at the end of our time together, we'll go through like a healthy breakup, if you want to call it that. So they've had this experience in a very healthy way and in a very safe way that they can experience how a relationship forms and works, what their role is, how to express themselves, so that by the time they're done with our process together, then hopefully they're in a healthier space and they can go out and have an experience with somebody on their own. And they meet with me once a week for 2 hours, and then they'll meet with their therapist as well once a week. So, and the therapist and I are talking together, and the client knows that, you know, we have an agreement that everybody can talk among each other, and after each of our session, a report is written so that it, you know, goes to the therapist, and everybody knows what's happening and where the client's developing, and if there's any hiccups or hang-ups or, you know, we might come up against something that maybe they've gone to a certain point, and then they're like, I don't know what I'm doing here, and there are some clients that have never seen female anatomy, except maybe on, you know, a porn screen or something like that. And they don't know, you know, so to give them an anatomy lesson, like real life, like here it is, this is what it really looks like. And this is, you know, key things to do and not to do. And to be able to give that kind of anatomy lesson is really good. There's some that have no idea where the vagina even is and where to insert their penis when it comes time. Like they don't even know. So to be able to show them is really valuable. Most people think like, oh my goodness, that would be such a sexually arousing thing. You know, when it's done in a really clinical way, it's not. I wish, first of all, I appreciate prostitution and I have no negative stigmas around that whatsoever. I think that there's a lot of prostitutes that do a really valuable lesson and they're very conscious and they have a lot to offer people that they see. This is different. Surrogacy is different in prostitution in the regard that it is taken, it's just step by step. There's a format that things are done and it's step by step and it's lessons being taught and guidance being given. There's a certain amount of set sessions that we set to see.
So what is your favorite thing about the job?
Seeing people change. Seeing people that come in really, a lot of times they come into the process feeling very bad that I have to pay somebody to teach me how to be intimate. I've come so low in my life that I have to pay somebody for the service or that I can't just be normal and discover this on my own. And they grieve a lot of loss in that they've experienced so many years in their life without having that. And so they go through a process where they grieve having missed out on that, what's wrong with me that I didn't get that, and then they start to accept that, oh, I'm learning some things that I can apply. And by the end of the process, they're standing taller and more confident and talking about, well, I met this girl and, you know, I want to go do these things, and then sharing experiences that they're starting to have in their outside life. And it's really cool to see that process take place. Had a client recently, middle-aged gentleman, that past client, but he contacted me to let me know that he had had his first sexual experience with a woman all on his own, and he was so proud of himself and so happy and so excited that it all went very smoothly and he was able to stay cool in his head, because in the past he had only ever gotten so close as he would get into a bedroom with somebody and then he wasn't able to have any kind of sexual activity because he'd be so nervous, everything about him would just shut down. I'm very honest with the clients that I see, and I will tell them, you know, that I'm not feeling that you're genuine, or I'm not seeing enough eye contact, or I'm not, you know, getting whatever it is that I think that they should be giving from an experience. Or I also tell them when I feel like they're doing something that's really powerful or really good and really sincere. And every single time they'll tell me, they're like, yeah, well, you just have to say those things, or you're just trying to make me feel better. And, you know, I have to remind them that, again, bad business for me to tell you that you're doing well at something if you're not, because then I'm just setting you up for failure. So it doesn't benefit either one of us for me to tell you that, yeah, you did that right and you've really mastered, you know, eye contact and conversation when you haven't, because you're going to go out there thinking that you've mastered that and you're going to fail. And then we go over everything too. We talk about hygiene. We talk about, you know, how to keep your breath fresh before you kiss somebody.
More and more you talk about this, I feel like this should be a part of sexual education.
It should be. It should be, because a lot of these are just basic things that people have just never heard.
Lori, just your average everyday woman, wife, mother, superhero. A lot of people would argue that women who do sex work for economic reasons are being harmed just as much as people who are being trafficked. We imagine a pimp in a fedora threatening to cut a bitch if she don't have his money. But what happens when that pimp is a federally insured loan company? Meet Mary. She owed money to some bad people, and they weren't going to just let it go. I'll let her pick up the story.
So when I graduated from college. I took my first job as an engineer, and I was working at a company making pretty good money, actually, better than, like, I don't know, the average teacher, right? But I had very large student loans, and so I actually couldn't, I could barely make rent. Like, I could make rent and pay off my student loans, and, like, that was kind of about it. I was pretty worried about money, and I didn't want to, like, have to ask my parents for money. I felt really weird doing that. I couldn't envision a way to make the money otherwise that I needed to make, because I only had a certain amount of time that I could work. I worked all day during the day, and I had things that I did. Like, I worked out and, you know, climbed with people and all of that, and I had all of that to do. And so I just didn't see a way to make the money that I needed to make in a short amount of, like, hours. And so I was sort of thinking about ways to that I could make money. I was like, oh, maybe I could be a stripper. And I was like, I don't know. Like, I'm not sure how much money it makes. And, like, I don't think I'm skinny enough to be a stripper. Like, I'd have to, like, work out all the time. And then I work during the day, so I don't think I have that much time to work out. So anyway, so I decided this is a terrible idea. Don't do this. But I went on Craigslist and I put an ad up saying, hey, you know, I'm a young girl and, you know, I'm having some financial problems. You know, would anyone like a massage from me you can pay me money and I'll give you a massage. Not thinking that I would get guys that would be interested in it because I was, like, you know, a young girl, but, I didn't think they would actually want to have sex with me, or not. They might want to, but they wouldn't, like, ask. So maybe it would just be, like, a cool massage that I would give someone for, I don't know, for money, and it would be great. Obviously, you hear horror stories. I'm not sure how often they actually happen, but it seems like a bad idea. I honestly could not tell you where the idea came from. I'm sure that I definitely thought of being a prostitute. That was definitely, like, a thing I thought of, and I was like, oh, I should go find an escort service and be, like, an escort. You know, I'm educated. Like, I could have a conversation with a congressman. So I thought about that, but then I had no idea where to start on that. I was like, I don't know. Like, they're secret, right? They have to be secret because this is illegal. So, like, I don't know how I'm going to find this. And so I met this guy who, ironically, his name was John, which I thought was funny. we met at, like, we met at some neutral location, like a coffee shop. And then we went back to a hotel, and I gave him a massage, and then he sort of basically tried to seduce me. And I was like, well, like, you're pretty cute. And, like, I didn't really think too hard about what this was going to be. But so we had sex, and it was pretty nice. And then he paid me, like, $200. And I was like, oh, this is great. And he said, you know, I know this great woman. She owns this massage parlor. Like, I think it would be a much safer environment for you than just, like, finding people on Craigslist. And I was like, I wholeheartedly agree. He gave me her number. And I called her and said, hey, you know, John recommended you, blah, blah, blah. And so we met at a coffee shop. She was wearing, like, I thought it was funny. She's wearing, like, dark glasses and, like, sort of being quiet in the corner. And we didn't know what each other looked like. We actually sat next to each other for about 5 minutes without realizing that we were supposed to be meeting each other. Because we were, like, texting back and forth, like, oh, are you here? And I'm like, yeah, I'm right here. Like, where are you? You know, she was really sweet. She's a really nice, wonderful woman. And she was like, well, are you free tonight? Like, I got clients tonight. And I was like, great. Okay, cool. So I went home and, like, showered or something and put on a dress and went over there. So that was how I got started. But it was, it was a really safe environment. Like, it was actually her house and she, like, had a room in her house she would use for this. And, her family all thought that she just had a regular massage therapy practice because she was actually a licensed massage therapist. I, of course, was not, which is illegal, fun fact, besides obviously prostitution being illegal. Yeah, she posted, like, an ad on a website, like, took a few pictures of me, like, sort of, like, posing sexily with, like, without my face in the shot, and just posted it up there. And then that's how she got most of her customers. And she got, like, new people sometimes, but I would say probably, like, 75% of them were just, like, regulars that she'd had before with other people that worked for her. my madam said, hey, you know, I'm just going to take $50 for every visit that you have. You know, you can figure out the rest. I recommend, you know, $80 for a massage and then, you know, go up from there, whatever. So I usually tried to charge $200 if they wanted to have sex. Blowjob was like, I don't know. I didn't really like giving blowjobs because I wouldn't do it without a condom. And giving a blowjob with a condom is just the worst. So like a hand job was, I think I charged like $120. And then like a blowjob, I charged like $160 or $70 or whatever. I remember being pretty confused about exactly what to do. I mean, really, I would just wait for them to ask for something. And then I would either say, you know, yes or no. Because they would give you the money up front. And so if they gave me enough money up front, then, you know, I would do whatever they, you know, whatever things that up to that level of money that they gave me. But if they didn't and then they asked for something more, I'd be like, you know, no, I don't like, I don't really do that for, you know, how much you have paid me. Right. But that's like, it's hard because you're really not supposed to say anything because you don't like, in case they are a cop, like you can't say anything about like exchanging right sexual favors for money. So I don't know. It's all like weird and nuanced and like confusing.
Well, just to be clear, again, you had a job. Mm-hmm. You had like a 9-to-5 job.
Yeah, I had a 9-to-5 job as an engineer.
Right? Like, how much money were you making approximately, like ballpark?
At my regular job, $45,000 a year.
$45,000 a year. So this is above minimum wage.
Oh no, this is like a real job.
and your college loans still left it so that you could afford to pay off your loans and your rent. But not eat or leave your home.
Yeah, pretty much. It wasn't like, I think I maybe could have made it work, but I really didn't like being financially stressed. Like I really like financial security, I found. And so stressing about money like makes me not happy.
You weren't strung out on drugs. You weren't like forced to do this by some pimp or some boyfriend.
Nope.
This was Sally Mae pimping you out.
That's funny because that is one of my loan companies. But yes, yeah, this was basically Sally Mae pimping me out. I'm trying to math this. So I was making $45,000 a year, minus like what, 25% in taxes. So that's like $3,000 a month. I would only work 3 days a week, by the way. I worked 3 nights a week. I worked 2 nights a week and a Saturday all day. My madam was religious. She was, I think, Catholic. And so she wouldn't work on Sundays. And I just thought that was so funny. I'm like, you're a prostitute and you are upset about working on Sundays. Like, it's fine. Like, obviously, I have no moral problems with prostitutes because I was one. But when you're putting a religious frame around it, like, religion already says that what you're doing is wrong. Like, why do you care about doing it on a Sunday? I don't know. I was shocked by that, which was great. Like, it was nice having a weekend day to myself. So I worked 3 days a week, so 2 nights and a full day, and I would make $1,000 to $2,000 a week. Yeah, it was mostly $1,000. It was usually $1,000. I would have some good weeks where it was like $2,000, but I would make $1,000 a week. I was nervous, somewhat nervous all the time about getting an STD or getting arrested. Or getting some client that was like violent or something, just from existing in the world and like reading things. You know, I know how much sex workers are, you know, preyed on by law enforcement and by people in general. And so, you know, I was constantly a little bit nervous about that, but of course you get used to it. It was actually pretty stressful at times because, as I said, it's one, of course, I was always worried about getting caught. You know, arrest is not something that you want on your record when you are a legitimate, like, employee of a business, right? It'd be fine at the job that I'm at because, like, they already did my background check, but any future job, of course, that's going to be a problem. So I really didn't want to get arrested. I was worried about STDs. I got tested for STDs every month. I was super careful. I wouldn't kiss people on the mouth. I wouldn't let like any saliva near any of my mucous membranes, like nowhere. Like if I remember one time a guy like spit on my vagina and I almost punched him in the face. He was just trying to use it for lube. And I was just like, if you do that again, I will hit you. The shocking thing to me is how many guys asked to have sex with me without a condom. There's a lot of guys. And even in my personal life, like guys that I've hooked up with that have been like, I said, hey, do you want to use a condom? And they're like, oh yeah, I guess. And I'm like, what do you mean you guess? Like, Anyway, yeah, but it shocked me on two levels how many guys didn't want to use a condom. One, because it just seemed inconsiderate to me, right? But of course, like, when you're a prostitute, no one gives a shit about being considerate to you. So that's baseline. No one gives a fuck about whether or not you're having a good time. Like, your job is to make them have a good time and get paid for it. So they don't care. And then two, like, I'm a prostitute. I'm high risk. I have sex with people every day for money. Like, you should be concerned about having sex with me without a condom. Like, not me personally, because I get tested every fucking month and, like, I don't let people use. But, like, the fact that I'm saying yes, if I said yes to you, that would be bad, right? That would mean that I say yes to other people. Part of the reason I got out of it is because it really made me not like men. Because when they come to you and you're a prostitute, like, they want a thing and they want you to give them that thing and they don't really care about you as a person, right? You're just providing a service. And so they don't feel the need to be nice, right? They don't feel the need to, like, put up some, like, happy front of, like, what, you know, they want you to think. Like, they're brutally honest, which is, I actually thought was very wonderful and refreshing in some ways. People were more honest with me than they were with their own spouses. That was the other thing. It's like, I don't sleep with married men, but, like, when I was a prostitute, for some reason, that was okay for me because, like, they're paying me for it. So I'm just providing a service. Like, I'm not going to break up any marriages. They were brutally honest with me. But also means that, like, they're, you know, their most selfish self. So it did give me a really negative perspective on men, actually. You know, they would tell me exactly what they wanted sexually. They would tell me about their lives. They would tell me very honestly, like, how their relationships are. They would say, you know, they would do things that with me, like, they would ask for things that they would never ask their significant other, wife or girlfriend, to do for them. Which to me, like, no one ever said, like, hey, let's dress up in diapers, or, like, no one said anything crazy to me. Like, no one said anything to me that I'd never heard before. And so it seemed interesting to me how much people were not honest with their own sexual partners about what they wanted out of their sex life. That was another really positive thing, is learning about communication during sex. Because once again, there's no emotional component. Like, they don't feel weird about me feeling weird because they're paying me and my job is to do what they want, right? So they don't feel weird about it. And so they just ask for whatever they want. And all, like, everything they wanted was totally normal stuff. And yet this is stuff that they would not ask their wives about. They would tell me, like, oh, I don't do this with my wife. Like, and I'm like, I don't understand why. So there's the good and the bad, right? So the bad was, I didn't like that when I was in a bad mood, I still had to have sex with someone. If I had a bad day, I don't, like, it doesn't matter. You still have to have sex with someone that you don't enjoy as a person sometimes. That was, I think, the hardest part was guys that I did not like on a personal level. I thought that they were bad people on a personal level. And so it was kind of hard to sort of, like, get through having sex with them or whatever it was. You know, people do stuff at work they don't want to do all the time. Like, I have a report that I write, like, every week, and I hate it, but, like, I just do it. And so it's sort of the same thing. It's just that, of course, like, sex is so much emotionally charged. And so, of course, it makes it a little bit harder, but, I mean, obviously, I had bad sex, like, but I orgasmed, like, almost every, like, not every session, but, like, every day that I worked. So it wasn't all bad. Like, it was at worst, like, bad sex that I would imagine having with someone that was, you know, like, a bad husband. None of the sex was so bad that it was not worse than sex I'd had in my personal life. And actually, yeah, the first image that comes to mind of the worst sex I've ever had is definitely personal life sex, not sex worker sex. For example, in personal life, I had on two occasions, with two different men, like, years apart, just straight up open hand slap to the face, like, super hard in the middle of sex. And I would think that people would ask first, you know, before doing that. But anyway, but that's right. All of that, like, all of my worst, I think, sexual experiences were all in my personal life. I guess, yeah, I'm going to sort of take back it was never bad sex, because most of it was bad sex, but I expected bad sex. Like, I knew that I was not there to get pleasure. I was there to give pleasure, and that was my job, and that's what I was doing. So the expectations were set, and therefore, I guess, because my expectations were like, I'm not going to orgasm and I'm going to give you a good time and you're going to give me money. We're going to be done. I don't consider it bad because it met my expectation of what I was planning on doing. But on the good side, I had a good time. It was really good money. I felt, I think, as safe as I could being a sex worker. It was a super small shop, so it wasn't high profile, so it's not likely to be like hit by the police. But I still had the protection of someone who had done it for years and, you know, knew what she was doing. One thing that I really loved about sex work is that it taught me a lot about consent. It was really great because once it was a business transaction, it was so much easier for me to say no. Like once there was no emotion in it, like once I wasn't hurting someone's feelings or, you know, something, once I wasn't hurting someone's feelings, I had no problem being like, no, I'm not going to give you a blowjob because you only paid me $80 and that's not what we do here. I would say that before then, I had a really hard time saying no to people. I definitely found myself in situations where, like, the next morning or, like, you know, an hour later, I was like, God, like, I really wish I hadn't done that. Like, I really wasn't into that guy. Like, I just sort of did it because he wanted to. And, like, I didn't really want to, but I didn't want to, like, make it awkward. So I just, like, had sex with him. And, like, now I feel bad about myself. And that sucks. Once I was able to take emotion out of it and make it a business transaction, it was so much easier for me to just be like, no, I'm not going to let you pressure me into doing this. Because of it being a business transaction and because of me knowing that there are pressures for sex workers and there's dangers around being a sex worker, it made me a lot more strong about, okay, well, this is a safety issue, first of all, because I need to be firm with you because otherwise you're going to take advantage of me. And two, it's money. And so it's not personal and I don't have to feel bad about saying no to you. I had a lot of problems with figuring out when to say no and if I didn't like something. It was really hard for me. And it taught me that you can have boundaries and it's okay. And people don't get angry when you say, you know, no, I'm not going to do this. Because there were some hard limits. Like I didn't want to have anal sex with anyone. I felt uncomfortable having anal sex with someone that I didn't trust. Just because like I, you know, wasn't super experienced in it and I didn't want to have any permanent injuries, right? So it was great. Taught me a lot about boundaries. And then it also taught me a lot about, honestly, it was a big self-esteem booster. I would have guys come in that I would never approach in a bar because they were so hot and they would pay me to have sex with them. I was like, well, this is a good day. Like, I'm getting paid to have sex with people that are super hot. Like, this is awesome. I had some clients, one guy just wanted to get me off and then snuggle and he didn't want to have an orgasm. Like he just wanted to like finger me, like get me off and then we would snuggle. And like, that was it. That was my favorite customer for sure. When his name showed up on the books, I was like, yes, gonna get off and then snuggle today. It's gonna be great.
So for any guys or women out there who are planning on going and getting a massage or a happy ending of some sort, what advice would you give those people? How should they treat? How should they tip?
Yeah, be nice, be polite, please. But be honest, like tell the person what you want. And make sure that, you know, they're comfortable with it. Don't try to pressure them into anything they don't want to do. Tip well, take a shower beforehand. Pro tip. And if someone says like it's $200, like that doesn't mean only pay me $200. Like I'm not going to be upset if you only pay me $200 because obviously I'm making really good money, or I was, but you know, feel free to tip. It's nice. It feels good at the end. If someone tips you extra, you're like, oh, I did a good job.
So personally, I think it's time to end our ridiculous ban on something that is literally unbannable. It is known as the world's oldest profession, for fuck's sake. You don't get those kind of legs without people wanting this service. And our own history has shown how successful you can be at banning things that people actually want. And it's not as if the prohibition has led to any real curbs in prostitution. If I wanted to buy a hand job right now, I could walk out of my house in a lovely, middle-class Southern California neighborhood and stroll to one of four nearby massage parlors in walking distance that no doubt specialize in yanking my crank. And I'm talking Southern California walking distance. Of the places that are likely Jack Shack massage parlors in a 10-mile radius, I can probably think of at least 25 that I'm aware of. These places are everywhere. Think about your own neighborhood. I bet you can think of at least one strip mall massage parlor near you that you know is a front for sex workers. Someone is keeping these places in business, right? They're not all fronts for Breaking Bad-style drug kingpins. Statistically, that's not possible. So someone must be paying for handjobs and more at these places, right? Oh my, who could it possibly be? So if we can't stop sex work, hell, if we don't want to stop sex work, and making it a crime is only making it more difficult and dangerous for everyone, then why not legalize it? Tax the money. Require health screenings for the sex workers. Perhaps require some screening for the clients, even. Maybe in the same way that I have to see a doctor to get a medical marijuana card in California, you should need a doctor's clearance to see a sex worker. That way, you could catch people who don't know that they have treatable infections. Sex workers could report thefts and sexual assaults from clients to the police. No one's life would be ruined by a prostitution arrest. On top of that, we could even instill harsher penalties for people buying sex outside the legal framework. That would curb the sex trafficking and push those who do plan on paying for sex towards the legal sex worker market. Is this a fantasy? Most definitely. America is a pretty fucked up place when it comes to sex. But perhaps by bringing these things out into the open, we can start to push things in a more sane direction. Possibly. I'm not super confident about that, but hell, I'm willing to try. Well, that's it for today, folks. Thanks for listening. Today's show was brought to you by me. Me. Fast, affordable, ready in minutes. I'd like to thank my guests for today's show, Mary and Lori. Thank you so much for sharing your stories. I couldn't have done this without you. And thank you to Karmaker for just being her amazing, wonderful self. And a special thanks to Alex Eastberg, Tim Grierson, Stuart Radford, everyone who helped me with this thing. I know I'm forgetting people, and thank you. A very special thank you to my lovely mother. May you never actually hear this, but when you eventually do, I love you. Please visit majorsexparty.com and like and tweet and tumble all over us on our various social media platforms. And subscribe to the podcast on iTunes so that you never miss any of this filth. You can listen to past episodes, including the live Major Sex Party panel shows that I do from time to time. They're kind of awesome. Coming up on next week's party, I talk to one gay man who found himself saddened by the gay marriage ruling. We talk about why. So come on in and join the fun at Jason Major's Sex Party.
Look what they've done to my soma. Look what they've done to my soma. Well, it's the only thing I could do half right. Just turn it out all wrong, ma. Look what they've done.